Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LeDuc. In 1917, New York State was one of the first of the United States to grant women the right to vote. To celebrate that important anniversary, Shaker Museum Mount Lebanon organized the new exhibition, Break Every Yoke, Shakers, Gender Equality, and Women's Suffrage, which will be on view at the museum through October 9th. The exhibition draws on more than 75 artifacts from Shaker Museum Mount Lebanon's collections, and I went there recently to discuss the exhibition with Shaker Museum Executive Director Lacey Schutz. We began by speaking about how the exhibition was put together.
It started with a grant from NISCA, which is the New York State Council on the Arts. They had a special funding category last year because it's the centennial of women's suffrage in New York State, which is several years before women's suffrage came to the nation as a whole. That really was the driver and the beginning of this exhibition.
So what do you think, to start, we should know about Ann Lee and Shakers?
Well, Ann Lee was born in Manchester, England, and she was the daughter of a blacksmith and a cotton factory worker. She grew up illiterate. She never learned how to read and write. She was opposed to marriage, but she was forced to marry by her father, and she lost four children in childbirth or infancy. We don't really know, which I think is an important thing to keep in mind when you consider that celibacy became a main tenet of the Shaker faith.
And she came to America, and how did she go about creating her own sect?
She actually started having visions and sort of preaching when she was still in England, and she accumulated a small group of followers, and they came to the United States in 1774, and they actually sort of hung out in New York City for a while, working and kind of getting their bearings, and I think probably getting some money together. And then they came up here. They came actually to Watervliet near Albany, and they settled there for a little while, and they farmed, and then they came to Mount Lebanon, which is where they established their first organized community.
How were they generally received?
It really varied. There were people who were violently opposed to Ann Lee and to the Shakers. They were British at a time of the Revolutionary War, so they often were thought to be spies. One interesting thing is that many people thought that Ann Lee must be a man in disguise, because how could a woman be leading a religion? But there were others who heard her preach and witnessed the sort of Shaker life that was being established and found it very, very attractive and joined.
Could you explain further what, to people who found it attractive, what is it about it that was appealing?
It was a very stable community in a lot of ways, in that you had food year-round, you had good quality warm clothing, you had a warm place to sleep. That was sort of, you know, on a very basic level, it met people's needs. And then I think a lot of people found the communal living very attractive, that you joined in this faith and you had a community of people who were all working for the good of the community. Nobody really was thinking about their individual needs. And I think also in a time when there was a lot of religious fervor going on during the Second Great Awakening, there was a great desire to find a true faith. And for some people, this was the true faith.
Where does gender equality and suffrage enter into the story?
Well, Ann Lee set a precedent for female leadership within the religion, and her immediate successor after her death was another woman. And, you know, oftentimes when you have a religious sect that's led by this very charismatic leader, when that charismatic leader dies, the whole thing falls apart. So there was another woman who came in, and she's the one who really solidified the religion and, you know, brought the community through that precarious time and established it to become what it became in the 19th century.
And that's Lucy Wright. Was she literate? Did that help, do you think, in like solidifying some of the tenets of the faith?
Interestingly, she was very resistant to writing anything down. So I think there was a lot of internal organization going on, but the Shakers at the time, and I think it came from the fact that many of the original ones were illiterate, they were very suspicious of actually codifying anything. And I think partly that may have been because they didn't want their writings to get into the hands of people who would then use them against them.
What is in the exhibition? Let's start looking around here.
So we had a bit of a challenge in representing the very early days of the Shakers because, again, they didn't write things down. We don't have letters and things like that. Obviously, photography didn't exist. So being able to represent the lives of Lucy Wright and Ann Lee was not easy. But one of the things that we have in the Shaker Museum collection that's very special is sort of a relic that got handed down among many generations of Shakers, and it's said to be a piece of Mother Ann Lee's apron that she wore, her apron or her dress that she wore on the boat to America. In later years, when the Shakers became less worried about writing things down, they created a sort of oral history of the life of Ann Lee called the Testimonies, and we have a couple copies of that.
So what is this right here?
Shakers would make pilgrimages to the burial place of Ann Lee and Lucy Wright, and that's at Watervliet. And they would often collect things from the site, like leaves or flowers, and they would press them as a sort of keepsake memory.
As we move down the line here, what are we looking at now?
In this section, we have a little bit about a Shaker named Amelia Culver, and she was a teacher here at Mount Lebanon, and she also published something called Everyday Biography, and it's a collection of short biographies of famous people of the day, including many suffragists.
The education was equal, but were the genders completely separate?
They did stay separate. I mean, by and large, the men and the women had duties and tasks that were very much divided along gender lines. But that didn't mean that they didn't cross over. You know, there's stories about, there was something like some flood that happened, and there's a story about all of the Shaker women getting out there with wheelbarrows and shovels and side by side with the men. And there's also tales of the men helping out with the laundry and things like that. So it was bifurcated along gender lines, but it doesn't mean that they didn't cross over. So from about the late 1830s to the early 1850s, something happened among the Shakers called the Era of Manifestations. And during this time, many Shakers received communications from the other world. And they often came from Ann Lee and other departed Shakers, Shaker leaders, Shaker founders. And they would often manifest in these things like you see here, a gift drawing. So, you know, sort of by and large women, some men, but mostly women, received these kind of these messages, these communications, and they would manifest them into these drawings. Sometimes they would manifest as hymns or songs or even spells of laughing or spinning and things like that. So here we have some examples of that, and then also of one of the hymnals that was kept that recorded some of the songs that were supposedly, you know, given from the spirit world.
Who or what organization or group has preserved these things? Like the ones we're looking at are facsimiles, but the real ones were saved through time at some point. Who saved them?
Well, we did, for one thing. When this exhibition opened, we had the originals out, but they are very fragile, so we put them back into very secure climate-controlled storage. But they survive in a lot of collections. We have some, obviously Hancock, Shaker Village has some, and then there's a lot of private collectors that have collected these as well. So this section addresses economy and commerce. The Shakers were brilliant business people. They had a lot of industries. I think most people know that they made chairs and oval boxes and baskets and things like that. But they also made clothing. They made cloaks and sweaters. And they had a fairly lucrative business going, making botanical medicinals. A lot of this work was done by women. And what we see here is a knitting machine. And an example of one of the sweaters that they produced. The Shaker community at Canterbury, New Hampshire, was located very close to Dartmouth, and they would make letter sweaters, basically. That was an ongoing business for them. And then the cloaks, which I think a lot of people are familiar with, were actually very popular among non-Shaker women. The Shakers would actually go to New York City and kind of hawk these cloaks, and it was very exciting. And there's stories about seeing Shaker women at the Astor Hotel, and how, you know, the big contrast between their very gray sort of attire, but they're selling to these very fancy women. They were very good marketers. Most of the villages had shops of some sort where people could come. They had a mail order business. You could mail in, you know, you want this kind of cloak and this style and this length and this color. They really had their product out there.
We're at Shaker Museum Mount Lebanon speaking with Executive Director Lacey Schutz and talking about the exhibition, Break Every Yoke, Shakers, Gender Equality, and Women's Suffrage.
This is an interesting example of crossing gender lines with the work. After the Civil War, you know, sort of between the Civil War and the increasing industrialization in the United States, the male population of Shaker villages started to decline, and it was really women who had to take over a lot of the administration of the communities. And this is an example where a woman named Lillian Barlow took over chair making here at Mount Lebanon. There are these great photos of her turning legs on a lathe and things like that. She and another woman who did the fabric seats of the chairs, they really kept the business going when there were no men left to do it.
What do we have in here?
So the Shakers, in the early decades of the faith, they were very inwardly focused and they weren't so interested in interacting with the world. That changed a little bit when they started to have all of their industries going, like the cloaks and the medicinals. They were actively selling to the world. But at some point in the late 19th century, the Shakers became involved in a lot of progressive causes. They became involved in prevention of cruelty to animals, to abolition of slavery, to women's suffrage, vegetarianism. And it was really largely driven by the women, which I think is a result of them having had many decades of good education and having been allowed to take part in the governance of the communities.
So in that kind of activism and engagement, do they encourage and educate, or try to, or want to, non-Shakers as well as other people within the Shaker faith?
Absolutely. They were still actively trying to proselytize and get new members at that point. So it was an era when camp meetings and chautauquas and things like that were very popular. They would send delegations of Shakers out to these gatherings and try to find people who might be interested in joining them.
Vegetarianism, suffrage, animal protection, sounds like, if I can generalize to start, left-leaning sort of issues, like kind of liberal issues, if you like reapply them to today.
Right.
Not completely, but sort of generally. Would you say that there's a kind of liberal bias even within this relatively conservative religious faction?
I think it's really hard to say they were conservative or they were liberal. I think they don't easily fit into either of those categories, although they cared about equality and they cared about integrity and faith and community and these things that we might put into either category, actually. The title of the show, which is Break Every Yoke, comes from a poem that was written by a Shaker woman, actually about the Civil War, not about women's suffrage. But the whole idea was that there were many yokes that humans were under. And it was if you were a slave in the South, or you were a wage slave, or you were a woman, all of those situations needed to be resolved in order to create the paradise on earth that Shakers believed was possible.
Lacey Schutz is the executive director of Shaker Museum Mount Lebanon. Break Every Yoke, Shakers, Gender Equality, and Women's Suffrage will be on view through October 9th. To learn more, visit shakerml.org. That link will be posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable.